still there as Wichita as they head down to the closing stages. Circus Maximus is very brave. Siskin and Mojave in the blue and white coming down the outside to challenge. Mojave in the blue and white comes late on to grab victory in the Qatar Sussex. Circus Maximus in second, then Siskin, Cambico, Wichita behind those San Donato.
Mojave coming down the outside, Maddie, and it was a race with a fair bit of hard luck stories attached to it, including Cambico, who was ridden by Asheen Murphy, pardon me, and Asheen doing what he does best has come out publicly afterwards and put on social media that it was pilot error that cost Cambico the win.
Gee, that's hard on himself there, because a story I've written for the website is drawing a bit of a comparison between that and the Bowman situation. And, you know, he didn't need the mea culpa, because there was nothing he could do. He was, you know, that's a very long straight on a spacious track, and he was behind the leader with 600 to go in a straight line. And you could see what he was trying to do. He had the horse's head on its side on Cambico, and he was just waiting for the gap to appear. And it just simply didn't appear. And Matt Chapman put out a tweet basically defending the ride of Asheen Murphy and defending any jockey who ends up in a perilous position like that and just can't get out, you know. And we saw what happened with Hugh Bowman when he did try and force the issue, and you can see what can sometimes happen. And it was interesting that the Chapman tweet basically saying, pull your head in if you think he did anything wrong, and go and bet on something else because you don't understand horse racing. And the responses that he got were mixed, and it was the same as the sort of responses you get here on social media too, of some understanding and others just crucifying the ride. And you know what it's like once the die is cast and the race takes shape, you can't move them around like chess pieces, because it just doesn't happen that way. And if you do try and force your way out, sometimes the consequences can be terrible. So I don't think Asheen Murphy had to do that. I think he's way, way too polite. I think he should have just said, suck it and see, and I'll try and do better next time. And that's the winner, Mohithea, at Royal Ascot at its previous start under Jim Crowley, had been terribly unlucky. And it's just the rub of the green sometimes, as we all know.
And he looked like he was going to be unlucky as well, but Jim Crowley managed to basically pull him around the entire field and get him to the outside. Circus Maximus led. A lot of people were saying that that's been the best form race of the season so far. I think there were 7 Group 1 winners in that race, so it'll be interesting to see what comes out of it. And we probably don't see that many unlucky runners, because we're used to the wide open spaces in UK racing, but Goodwood is a track where you can have some unlucky runners. And it all continues again tonight, Matty. We get to see Magic Wand in action in the Nassau, the Group 1 tonight.
Yeah, and I think the jury's been out on Magic Wand for a good 12 months now, or maybe a little bit less. So be interesting to see where Magic Wand fits into the overall scheme of the European summer. But just back to what you said then, I think they do race a lot more open over there, but you watch a lot of races where they find a lane, particularly in a straight line, and you have these acres upon acres upon acres of track, and they do tend to all want to fall into line on what is a perceived fast lane. So it's not always just here where we have these lanes and bias. They do manage to squeeze into a tight area on a wide open space over there as well, and that's kind of what we saw in the Sussex Stakes overnight.
You mentioned Hugh Bowman. Hearing continues this morning in Sydney.
Well, it's going to be intriguing, isn't it? Because the stewards have already, they're underway. They began the inquiry after the last at Rose Hill. They don't need Andrew Adkins as evidence. And I can understand why. He was the victim. He wasn't part of the scenario that created the circumstance. So, and Andrew Adkins has said to the stewards, yeah, look, I'm more than happy for the inquiry to go on without me. Crucially, we're going to hear from Glenn Schofield, whose mount edged out, well, seemingly edged out a little bit, and may have had a contributing factor. And obviously hearing from Hugh Bowman publicly, because I know RaceNet and others are going to be involved in the inquiry. So I just think we're just going to learn more. I think it's going to be very educational. It may not be of any great assistance to Hugh Bowman, but it's going to be interesting to hear in his words and Glenn Schofield's words and with multiple vision a little bit more about the circumstances that led to the fall.
Yeah, it will be fascinating to see what comes out of that. There's still big money floating around on the Gold Coast. Congratulations to the connections of Vedora, 2.55 yesterday.
It just goes to show the old saying that the last thing to go in economic crisis is the horse. You know, you get rid of the boat, the you know, the partner sometimes, and you keep the horses. 2.5 for Vedora to Yulong, and that's off the 4.2 for Sunlight and all the other big prices during the week. I was having a good chat to Kieran Maher yesterday. We were talking about a Blaze and Tally Ho Twinkle Toe, and he said, "What would Loving Gabby be worth?" He wasn't suggesting that she's up for sale or anything, but an I Am Invincible mare with a sharp turn of foot. He remembered Jamaica went for 2.6, and you'd have to think that Loving Gabby would be in the Sunlight range if she was ever put to public auction with her similar record and flash pedigree and all that sort of stuff. So they do. It's incredible what these horses are worth. Good chat to Steve Pateman last night and to Kieran Maher, just setting the scene for this incredible clash in the Grand National Hurdle on Saturday between Tally Ho Twinkle Toe and Ablaze. They are rapidly climbing towards the Wells sort of bash boy, unprecedented handicapper ratings sort of stage of their career, where bash boy was a 157 and I think Wells was about 151, and Tally Ho Twinkle Toe is 149 and Ablaze is on his heels. And if they keep going the way they're going, they're going to smash through the ratings and be the two best jumpers we've seen for a long, long time. And so Tally Ho's got 73.5 in the National on Sunday and Ablaze has got 69.5. And Pateman was saying that he's not sure that the big weight is going to necessarily stop Tally Ho Twinkle Toe. He said he's got an incredible physique. He's a low to the ground, wide bulldog type horse. And he said his centre of gravity, he said, if anyone can handle that weight, he can handle it. So he's confident, and Kieran Maher's really confident with Ablaze, and Kieran Maher is already plotting a course, coronavirus aside, towards the Aintree Grand National next year, next April in the UK. So exciting times, and it's going to be the... I remember there was a great clash of Pentific... Oh, what was the other one? Robbie Lang had an amazing jumper as well back in the day, and there was an anticipation at Sandown for that clash as well. And I think this one with Tally Ho Twinkle Toe and Ablaze is, I don't remember a jumps race that I've been more interested in for a long, long time than this one on Sunday.
Well, if Tally Ho can win with 73.5 kilos, it'll be the highest weight carried to a win in the Nationals since 73. So
the minimum's higher, though, so yeah.
It is. It's a COVID year, but you still got to carry the weight at the end of the day, don't you?
Do. So, you do.
And Ablaze with 69.5, it is going to be a mouthwatering national on Sunday. Hey, just quickly, Matty, I know the MRC put out some stats, and we've got to give them a rap because they're always very transparent with their figures. And it was a year in review, and a couple of interesting statistics that they put out was that turnover across all Australian wagering operators, $1.79 billion. Now, it says that was even year on year, but turnover average per race, 2.96 million, which was up 1.5% year on year as well. So it's interesting, these figures. The biggest one that struck me was engagement, up 9.3 million people, which is Channel 7 viewers, up 35% year on year throughout that COVID period when there was no other game in town and Seven was televising the races on the Saturday.
And that reflected in the wagering spike as well. I had a chat to Josh Blanksby about the benefit reaped by racing when everything else was on ice through the coronavirus. A benefit in inverted commas, because there is no real coronavirus benefit, but there was an uplift, and they needed it too, because they needed to right the ship after a fairly bleak previous set of figures. So they were good signs there. A little idea that makes a bit of sense now. It didn't work when there were crowds, because the crowds got fatigue when they ran the feature races, the last race. But with no crowds and wanting to parlay into the AFL later that night in the news, they're seriously considering running the last race, say Caulfield Cup, Caulfield Guineas, as the last race feature and the last race on the day, closing the gap between it and the news and the footy and all that sort of stuff. And without crowds, it certainly seems to make sense. So they might even explore that option, the MRC.
Looking forward to the Racing Australia figures, Racing Victoria, I should say, figures, which will come out next week. We'll have a chat to Brian Kruger about that as well. And just a quick one as we say goodbye, the Media Awards. Ollie beat Willow and Dwayne Dunn, actually, the Roy Higgins medal for the champion jockey. Beat Dwayne Dunn 142-139. So another Roy Higgins medal to Damien Oliver. And Michael Poy, for the second year in a row, won the Apprentice Award, the Darren Gouchy medal as well. So that's the Victorian Media Association Awards there. Matty, we'll read all about it on rsn.net.au.
Thanks, Mick.